Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts Podcast. We are almost a week and a half away from our final event of the season, and I got to play some golf today, and I can't tell you how great fall golf is up north. So I'm super excited for this last event. If the weather holds off without rain, it is going to be awesome, because it is just such a pleasant time to walk around and swing a golf club this time of year. Everything is lush. The rough is incredibly, you know, thick. Greens are rolling fast. It's just such a fun time to play, and you're not sweating through your third shirt like I usually do in the midsummer. So, you know, with that being said, we are super psyched to be walking up to our last event, and hope you all join us. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the end. But it is college football season. A lot of fun games last week. I almost started texting Will and Glenn just to say, hey, what a boring week this is. There's really no good games to watch except for the Colorado State game. And then kind of half paying attention, I got back from coaching, and all the games that I thought would be blowouts were much closer than I thought. So I feel like it's just one of those kind of seasons. So we'll dive into that a little bit. And we'll talk about the Fortnite and JT's resurgence right before Rome, and then talk a little bit of the NFL stuff too, because it is a strange season in the NFL too. Maybe it's just a strange football season, but teams that you thought were going to dominate are really struggling. Players that you thought were going to dominate or look like they've never played football before. A lot of injuries to talk about, and just kind of where's this next, not just this next weekend, but what's this next surge of games looks like? Who's going to really rise to the top? Where's kind of everyone rank? So we'll talk a little bit about that too. Glenn, unfortunately, could not make it today. So Will and I are going to do this solo and take you through the weekend. All right, Will, where do you want to start, bud?
We got to start with, this is at least to date and maybe all season going to be the biggest college football weekend of the year. College game day is going to be in South Bend for Notre Dame, Ohio State. Florida State is going to Clemson after a scare in Chestnut Hill. We have Rutgers going to Michigan, Michigan playing their first Power 5 opponent. We have Ole Miss and Alabama and all the trolling that Lane Kiffin is already doing. And of course, we have Colorado going to Oregon in what is probably going to be the most watched game with a 3-score spread that I can remember. Although I think the Colorado State game might have been a 4-score spread, so I think I'm safe there. But Craig, we got to start. This Michigan team came into the year with a lot of hype. They were a lot of people's national championship pick. They brought back a lot of the talent that they relied on last year. Corum is back. Edwards is back. JJ is obviously back. Roman Wilson is back. You know, that's a very complete team that they brought back from one that was within a hair's breadth of playing in the national championship. I don't think they've scored more than, what, 31 points in a game this year. Their opponents have not been impressive. JJ McCarthy completed two of his first five passes to the other team on Saturday. I'm not going to ask you if it's time to sound the alarm bells, because we've seen teams get off to slow starts and end up dominant before. But as you think about what you were expecting out of the Wolverines in these first three games, how do you grade what you saw? How do you grapple with the product that they've put on the field?
Well, I'm not worried about the points scored in total, because if you really watch the games, they're pulling all their starters in the fourth because they're a lot more out of hand than you thought. And even this game was super frustrating to see the turnovers early, because they'd get some momentum, make a dumb turnover, and bring it back. But I think in my heart of hearts, I feel like they're almost playing down to their opponents to a certain degree, because, you know, I was never worried about their offense. Their offense is, like you said, they brought back a lot of starters from last year that did great. They know the system. They know exactly what's going on. Harbaugh not being on the sidelines, I don't think is really impacting them that much. Defense, there's a lot of new players out there, but super talented. Long story short, though, I really just feel like they're not really worried about these guys, and it's hard to get up for these games week in and week out when you know you should be blowing them out. Where if it's like your rival week in and week out, where you know you're going to get smashed in the face, and it's either, you know, the first mistake you make is could be the last one that's going to make the difference of the game or not. I just feel like these games, they always feel like they're not out of hand. Even watching them, I can watch them and do 13 other things and know for a fact that when I come back, it's still going to be Michigan's win. But that's a problem, I think, with this light schedule. Like, if you don't have these challenging games that keep you in check and really, you know, make sure everyone's accountable and doing what they're supposed to do, you're not ready by the end of the season necessarily for that big, big matchup. So I don't know. You know, Glenn's not going to want to hear this. I don't think Rutgers is in that category yet to really be that challenge that they're looking for. I think Rutgers will put up a good fight like they always do. But, you know, the only game I'm really excited to watch this weekend is Ohio State and Notre Dame. I mean, FSU Clemson is going to be good. I feel like I don't want to miss a Colorado game right now because I'm just so excited about Prime and what he's doing and his kids and this and that. And just it's the best story in football by far. Right. If Colorado goes on to win the national championship this year, even if they ended up beating a Michigan, which would, you know, hurt my soul to a certain degree, but you got to still be excited. I don't know who's rooting against that team right now with the show that they're putting on. So long story short, I'm not super worried about it as far as what they've done so far. I am worried about what it's going to do to them towards the end of the season as far as getting them ready for the big show.
Also, I need to check myself. They put up 35 against UNLV. They put up 30 against East Carolina and 31 against Bowling Green. But even the Bowling Green game, I mean, that was what, 14-6 early in the second half, and Michigan didn't really blow it open until they had a tipped pass touchdown on like a flea flicker. Like it was weird stuff happening in that game. And again, certainly not time to be concerned about a Michigan team that hasn't allowed more than 7 points in a game, has won every game by four scores. Like, but we saw in the TCU game, JJ McCarthy turning the ball over. We saw what happens when Michigan gets into the red zone and doesn't score. And I was expecting them to come out and look at least more buttoned up than they've looked. And we've talked about it. You know, their first Power Five road game is at Nebraska. I don't think you're worried about at Nebraska, at Minnesota. Michigan State is an entire dumpster fire for a variety of reasons, obviously. Like, there's really not a game that, and we'll talk about Florida State, and they may make me reconsider this statement, but there's not a game that you're worried about them losing until Penn State on November 11th. And I see where you're coming from. They've taken care of business. The defense has been good. They've been pulling their starters, etc. But like, does it make a difference to you if they go out and win one of these games 52-0 or if they keep winning 30-7? Like, does that move the needle at all?
No, not at all. Because I still don't feel like any of these things are a real challenge to them. They should be winning by 30-40 points. But I get it too. Like, I do like the fact that they're pulling their players once they feel they have control. They're getting some younger kids playing time and all that jazz. So they're obviously not concerned about winning more than what they have right now as far as the point spread, which is great because you really don't need to, right? I'd rather get these other players ready to go because you're going to at some point be next man up if people really start getting hurt. But, you know, even if they won all these games 51-7 or 51-0 as opposed to, you know, the 30s that they're winning now, it doesn't matter. I mean, I think they're a fictitious top five until they really start playing people. And that's coming from a huge fan. And that's just, I would say that about anybody with the schedule that they have.
They'll have an opportunity to prove it. It hasn't come yet.
Yeah, it'll just be a while, which sucks. I feel like all these schools should really start to challenge themselves. Even if it's like, you know, it's impossible to say who's going to be where, but you pretty much know who that top 25 is when you're scheduling the next season. So, or projected top 25. And you can always then say, hey, we gave it a shot. These other teams just crapped out really early and they weren't what they were projected to be. But like Colorado TCU week one, man, that's phenomenal. And what a game it ended up being for the fans and everybody else. This is just all about the money, right? This is all about protecting yourself because all the big money comes in towards the end of the season. So this is almost like all this is preseason to all these guys and whatever. And nobody wants to put themselves in jeopardy unless they absolutely have to until that point. But, you know, I don't know. It does. So regardless, I think they're a fictitious five until they prove it.
Yeah, you know. That makes sense. I think we got to talk about Coach Prime, you know, with Colorado being 3-0, I think their win total over under going into this year was 3.5. They're obviously coming off a one win season. And they're one of, if not the best story in college football. But I'm going to make the case against Colorado because I think there are some things that ought to be called out about the way the team has played and the way the program has operated. And let me be the first to say, I think what's going on there is riveting. I think it's super exciting. I love that they just took this program and turned it around like clockwork. I think it's great. But here's the case against Colorado. First, starting with the most recent game, you're a 24-point home favorite against a Mountain West team. You have a former number one overall recruit on your team. You have the pick of the litter of everyone you wanted from the transfer portal. You have home field advantage. And it takes you double overtime to beat Colorado State? That shouldn't happen. They should not have needed a 98-yard drive in the last minute and a half of the game and a two-point conversion to force overtime. They should not have been in that close a game with that quality of a team. They should not have needed Colorado State to commit like 15 personal fouls to keep them in the game. Second, the transfer portal is good in the sense that it gives players the same freedom of movement that coaches have had. And that's great. But what we saw with Colorado is there is the option, and I would argue now the incentive, for coaches to go into a new job and force everybody out, inherit nobody on the roster. And I think that's a bad way to operate. Like, I don't think that you should go in and tell 85 guys that, hey, sorry, there's not a spot for you here anymore. I don't think that's something we should be encouraging. And I understand that if you remove them from the team and they don't transfer somewhere else, their scholarship still gets paid. I think the NCAA needs to do something about this. Maybe guys who you force off the team who don't transfer need to still count against your scholarship limit. Because to the extent that we care about the players, creating this opportunity for coaches to come in and just pick and choose or just eliminate the entire existing team, that is not something we would do if we cared about the players. So if you want to be offended by what Colorado's doing, I think that's the thing to be offended by. And third, I love the way Deion is operating. He's clearly a coach who knows how to get the most out of his guys. I think he put together a phenomenal staff. Sean Lewis, the offensive coordinator, who left a head coaching job to come be a coordinator for Deion, has clearly made the best decision of his life. But with that said, I understand there's some element of a rivalry between Colorado and Colorado State, and that's possibly why there was some animosity, and that animosity might have led to the safety for Colorado State blowing up Travis Hunter and doing something he regretted. I think Deion's going to get more of his guys hurt if he keeps looking for reasons to say every game is personal. What was it about TCU? Oh, well, TCU didn't want Shadur out of high school. It's personal. What was it with Nebraska? Oh, well, Matt Rule was saying whatever about the way Colorado operates. It's personal. What was it with Colorado State? Oh, well, Jay Norvell was saying I should take off my hat and sunglasses when I'm talking to adults. Now it's personal. If you keep creating rivalries with teams that are not your rival, who have no reason to have any animosity towards you, and you encourage them to play like it's a rivalry game, you're going to get 12 rivalry games. And I don't think this roster is deep enough to survive that. I think it's too talented to need that as motivation. And I think it's going to create just bad things coming from the opponent that they don't want to deal with. So I love what I'm seeing out of Colorado. If there's one miscalculation that I think Deion's made, it's that.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot to unpack there from your 3 points, but it took Notre Dame a long time to rebound from Lou Holtz leaving and having to rebuild that program. It took Michigan years and years and years to rebuild their program that was an absolute dynasty for a long time once Carr left.
Sure.
So I think what the portal does, it is now created an opportunity for these teams to be looked at and say, hey, we have an opportunity now to not miss a step. Well, the crazy part is it's that recruiting of folks is more so than it's like they're going to start forgetting the freshmen coming in. They're going to start forgetting the high school players as much, because that'll be a secondary thing. When you can have players that are already established and know football and you know exactly what you're getting with them, they've played at this level before, they're going to go after those guys in the portals much more than they're going to go after that high school kid that could be an absolute star, right? Like, there's a lot more risk in that because they haven't played in this level yet. So I think what the portal does do, it does give these guys the flexibility to say, man, not only am I a good coach, I'm a good salesman, and I know how to recruit. I'll get all these guys out of the portals to come over to my team, and I won't miss a beat. So if I lose three linemen to the NFL, I know that, you know, at the end of the day, I got three linemen coming from all these other schools that just didn't fit in, but, man, they'll fit into our program. It just gives them that flexibility. So I really like the portal in that sense. I do think it's going to hurt the younger kids coming in, because I think they'll be ignored, and there will be that it'll take them longer to get acclimated to these teams and harder to get recognized. But, you know, we've all, to a certain degree, have said these players need to get paid, right? These players need to do whatever. You get what you get it now. This is now a business, right? They're all eligible for these NIL deals. So they're all going to get paid. And this is exactly what it's like to go work at a business. This is like the NFL mini camp, right? Or the minor leagues, I guess you could say. And they're getting treated exactly like that. If you can't cut it at this team with this coach, guess what? You're gone, just like any other job, you know? And if you can get yourself promoted to being a starter and make a name for yourself on social media, you'll get paid for that, right? Like, if nothing else, Deion's kids are getting more time in the limelight than any other kid in college right now, because they're associated with him and he's pumping them up, and they're all getting these deals that most NFL, you know, rookies aren't making. So, you know, give him credit for all that stuff too. But we have now turned college football officially into a business for everybody. It's not the NCAA making money. All these kids have an opportunity to get money, but they're going to get treated like it too. They're going to get treated like employees, not college students anymore. So we have to take a little bit of ownership to that, to say, hey, we want everyone to get paid. We think these kids deserve it. Well, they're going to get it, but now they're going to get treated like it too. There's some shitty things that come with that, at the end of the day. So it's not perfect. And I do think that they still need to put more boundaries on it. To your point, maybe they, you know, restrict how many you can take each year, or you can't throw away the scholarships that you've given those kids that haven't done anything wrong. You know, they're still keeping their grades up and they're still playing at all-time level, but maybe they don't agree with the coach. Well, that sucks to throw that kid out on the street. So there's a lot of shit that they have to continue to figure out and pull together. But at the end of the day, it's a business now, more than it's ever been before. And it's open kind of warfare in a lot of ways. And as far as the rivalry goes, I don't know. Every good coach that I've ever had tries to make something out of every game, right? Because otherwise you rest on your laurels a little bit. Colorado is not a complete team. They have five or six phenomenal players that are carrying that team and kind of making up for the fact that there's a lot of other, you know, holes in this team, whether it's on the line or the linebackers or this or that, whatever. It's just, you know, they're relying on these kids that aren't leaving the field sometimes to make up for all of that stuff. So if you don't get those kids riled up and pissed off to a certain degree, you know, that's just, it's just a mechanism to say, hey, we're fighting for our lives. We're the underdog, right? Everyone likes to fight for the underdog, whatever. Even though they were favored against Colorado State, it was more of just the mentality of it's not us versus Colorado State. It's us versus the world. Nobody believes in us. Nobody thought Coach Prime could turn into a, from a high school coach, an NFL player from a high school coach to a, you know, a 1AA coach to where he is now. It just doesn't, it doesn't seem possible, but it's possible. And he's doing a great job doing it. These kids were, hey, you're never going to make it in the NCAA. You're a great high school kid, but you're never going to make it. Like, whatever it takes, he's just trying to motivate them to the best that he can. To your point, they all have targets on their backs now. But, you know, they're also getting a lot more notoriety than they've ever gotten before. So they're all of a sudden in Heisman talks. They're in, you know, player of the year talks. They're all on you know, NFL scout radars that they wouldn't have been anywhere else before. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, but it's a motivating tactic. And until they start losing, I don't know. I feel like he's got to do what he's got to do to keep that that school relevant. I mean, last year at this time, nobody gave a crap about Colorado.
Absolutely.
And all those kids that were pissed off about getting kicked out, none of them were going pro either, by the way. So it's kind of like if you're running a Division I school that you're expecting to be in the top 20 with that beautiful stadium and that huge following and all those boosters, man, you better produce. And they just they haven't been producing in a long, long time. So it's almost like he needed to come in and rock the boat best he can and the only way he knew how. So he's doing it. I mean, he's a great story for me. Do I think they're the best team in the nation? No. But I think he's doing a phenomenal job. And I think the kids that are his top five kids in, on that team are absolutely crushing it.
Yeah, they're studs. So. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where they go. They have Oregon this week. They have Southern Cal the next week. They're really getting into the teeth of the Pac-12 pretty quickly. I worry that people are setting themselves up to be disappointed. Like, so many people have already lost track of what it would mean, what an accomplishment it would be for this Colorado team to win 7 or 8 games. I think, you know, they beat a team that was just in the national championship, and now they're 3-0. And everyone's going crazy. And it's like, guys, you got to remember, he might have brought in 45 guys or whatever it was, but this team won one game last year. And we've seen them get pushed around on defense. We've seen that they're vulnerable to good passing attacks. We've seen that if you have a competent pass rush, you can really get into the backfield, mess with Shador. He holds the ball too long. Like, there are holes. That doesn't take away from the fact that it's a ridiculous accomplishment what they have already done.
Yeah.
So if they drop a game to Arizona State, like, that's fine.
Yeah.
They're still like, this team making a bowl game is going to be ridiculous.
I think if they make a bowl game and show well, he's still coach of the year.
Oh, easily.
What they had to, like, you know, all of a sudden just having a winning game, a winning season, getting into a bowl game and being relevant again.
Easily.
He's coach of the year. Like, you can't say that about Harbaugh, right? You can't say that about, you know, some of the other guys because they've already come from a stack system. To turn this around, I mean, you know how frustrated these Nebraska fans are?
Oh, my God.
They've tried time and time again with different coaches, different leadership, different recruiting tactics, even Rule now and there. They can't get it right, right? So, you know, take it for what it's worth. Everyone's got the same opportunities he's got. He's just seizing the moment much better than everybody else. And I think those sunglasses made something like 1.8 million. And I could be wrong on those numbers, so please don't hold to me. But it was something stupid, like 1.8 million in like one day after he gave out all the glasses to his team. So
insane.
He's making money any way he can.
Craig, we got to talk about Notre Dame, Ohio State. As far as I'm concerned, and I am biased, it's the biggest game of the weekend.
Yeah. Biggest game of the year so far. You know,
biggest game of the year so far. I mean, Alabama, Texas, I think was pretty big. Obviously, Alabama hasn't looked good since then, so maybe that warps it a little bit, but definitely one of the biggest games of the year for sure. Notre Dame hasn't beaten Ohio State since 1936. They've lost 5 in a row since then. I think it was 1 in the 70s, 2 in the 90s, and 2 since 2000. Michigan's beaten Ohio State twice in a row. And last year, that was the same Jim Knowles defense that Notre Dame is going to see this weekend. And I think the question is, Michigan's the only team in the country that we've seen with a reliable ability to beat Ohio State. You know, Ryan Day has 6 losses and 2 of them are the last 2 years to Michigan. What did Michigan do right in those games against Ohio State the last 2 years to beat them the way they did? And what should Notre Dame be taking? What pages should Notre Dame be taking out of Michigan's book from those games?
To me, it's going to come down to the Notre Dame defense has to hold Ohio State accountable, right? Because I think Ohio State's offense right now is not looking super sharp. I mean, I get it. You have, you know, Harris Jr., who's awesome. I get it. He's by far, I think, the best receiver in the nation right now. But the quarterback for Ohio State is not great. You know, they're constantly flopping different people in there, trying to do whatever. I don't think their running game is super scary right now. And I don't think they're loaded with a bunch of other receivers that really scare you. So I think Notre Dame's defense has to come out super aggressive, start hitting their quarterbacks, getting them rattled early to the point where now they're forcing themselves to make plays, which is when Ohio State's just not good enough. They're not like they used to be. They're just not good enough to make that outstanding play, you know, time and time again. They're going to screw up. And then Notre Dame should be able to capitalize on that. I think their offense is going to be fine. They're at least going to score, in my opinion, 21 to 27 points. So I just think if the defense holds that offense in check and really starts knocking them in the mouth, they're going to be in great shape. And that's what Michigan, the biggest point what Michigan had the last 2 years was that pass rush was just crashing down and crashing down and crashing down. And Ohio State just couldn't keep up. So I think that's the pattern that works for most teams. And I think Notre Dame is primed to do that this year. It's painful for me to say, but I'm rooting hard for Notre Dame this weekend.
Wow. I think this is the only matchup that could produce that result, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably. I'm trying to think who else would be up there, but there's not really another team in college football that I dislike as much as Ohio State right now. Mm-hmm. So my hatred for Notre Dame really only goes as far as you.
Yeah.
You know, before this, I never really cared much. But now, you know, since you like pushing my buttons, it's up there. But my true hatred for Ohio State has gone forever. And that's just because they beat the shit out of Michigan for the last 10 years, you know, except for the last 2. So I think they got them, though. I believe in you.
I got to say, I'm very nervous.
You should be. They're not a layup. You know, it's not like they don't suck. They're just not the Ohio State that we're used to seeing the last couple of years. And maybe it's going to take a little time, and maybe they flip the switch at some point and they turn into that again. I just think if I was going to play them, I'd much rather play them this weekend than when Michigan's going to play them at the end of the season.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Only because at that point it's like, all right, we're tuned up. Everyone's hyped up. It's the winner is going to win, you know, the division or potentially go to the, you know, the bigger bowl game or whatever, or make the playoffs. For you guys here, I think they're still in a little bit of disarray. So Notre Dame's playing great. Take advantage of it. Smash them in the ground.
Yeah, and we've seen Ohio State get off to slow starts in the past. You know, they had 2021. They lost to Oregon in Columbus. 2020, C.J. Stroud's first game. They really laid an egg at Minnesota and still ended up winning. But man, you know, I don't know how you, as the guy who knows more about football, think about this, but I've been really convinced in the past few years by watching Notre Dame in these big games that there's very rarely will you overcome a big gap in roster talent. Notre Dame almost did it in 2017 against Georgia. They almost did it in 2019 against Georgia. They almost did it in 2015 against the Deshaun Watson Clemson team. You know, they got smacked by the Trevor Lawrence team. They got smacked by the Devontae Smith Heisman winning Alabama team. And they lost to Ohio State last year at Ohio State. I was looking earlier today at the 24/7 roster talent rankings. Kyle McCord, who I think has been permanently named the starter for Ohio State, Travion Henderson, their starting running back, and Julian Fleming, who's like their number three receiver, would all be the highest rated player by recruiting ranking coming out of high school. So Sam Hartman is kind of a weird exception here on Notre Dame's team. Ohio State has eight guys at running back, wide receiver, or quarterback who would be the highest rated skill player on Notre Dame's offense. Like, that scares me. The fact that Julian Fleming, who is the third option for Kyle McCord when he drops back, would be the guy perceived as possibly the best offensive player on Notre Dame's team, that's terrifying to me. The fact that the guy we're talking about as an unimpressive quarterback was a top 30 recruit in his class, that scares me. And I understand that Notre Dame has made great strides in player development. You don't end up with Audric Estime being the number, you know, like maybe number one in yards per carry, but an incredibly good running back relative to the rest of the country without doing that. Obviously, Sam Hartman being in his sixth year is a weird case. If he were in high school right now, he'd be the five-star to end all five stars. But I'm just like, I feel like I've seen these games where Notre Dame is the far less talented roster. And I do feel like this Notre Dame team is better in that respect. The skill talent they brought in this year's freshman class is better than it's been in a long time. The talent that they brought in on defense in last year's class got them an All-American true freshman at corner. That was incredible. So I think there's a lot to like about what Notre Dame is bringing to the table, and a lot more to like about what they're bringing to the table this year than last Labor Day when they went to Columbus. But like, as good as I feel about this Notre Dame team and as high as a lot of the pundits are on them, I'm trying to remind people and honestly also remind myself, like, this would be a pretty major upset. I don't care that the line only opened at Ohio State by three. Like, this, a team with the talent of this Notre Dame team is not supposed to beat a team with the talent of this Ohio State team. It's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, but you know what? That's all stats, right? What you're not seeing is the results, you know, from so week in, week out. Ohio State, if you threw all those stats away and you just watched the game and then you really scrutinize the game film, those stats are almost irrelevant because that's not how they're playing right now. They're in a little bit of disarray. They're lacking a little bit of confidence. They're not making the consistent big play that they have in the past. So, yeah, I mean, on paper, Notre Dame's still the underdog. But, man, I wouldn't bet a ton of money on, you know, Ohio State walking away with this thing this weekend. Sure. I wouldn't bet any money on Ohio State walking away with this thing this weekend, because I just don't think – and we've seen it before. There's been a lot of really good football teams with the best talent in the world that just isn't hitting a groove. And they're losing to lesser opponents. And whether that's emotional, mental, physical, like, or a combination of all three, I think that's what Ohio State's going through a little bit right now. And, again, that doesn't mean they're not going to – flip the switch and then maybe against Notre Dame, and then they're going to go on for a huge run after that. But with that being said, if I'm in the Notre Dame locker room right now, I'm thinking to myself, we got these bastards. Like, this is going to be our week. Like, I don't think they're going into this game scared and intimidated. No. So that's all you really care about at the end of the day. If they have the mindset of we got this, you're in good shape, because if they go in there like, oh God, it's Ohio State. I bet you a year and a half ago when they saw that on their schedule for the folks that knew that it was coming, they'd be like, that's a loss, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's almost every team in the country would think that unless they're playing the old Alabamas of the world. But for right now, I don't know. I think Notre Dame's in good shape. So,
well, I do trust Sam Hartman with my life. So we'll see how far he can take this team.
That may come back and bite you. I don't know, dude, with your life. I don't know. But, you know, at least a good football game.
He's fine. I think the other game that is really interesting to me, and thank goodness it's a noon kick, so I can have something to take my mind off just the crippling nerves about the Ohio State game is Florida State Clemson. I think this game is riveting. So Florida State pulled basically the same nonsense that Colorado pulled. They were million point favorites going up on the road to BC, and they only pulled out a 2-point win. BC committed something like 18 penalties for 145 yards, including on a third down stop that would have forced Florida State to punt the ball back to them, a face mask that ended the game. Florida State, for all that was made about them against LSU, looked awful. They went up 31-10 and then allowed 18 or 19 unanswered points. It was like embarrassing. And this BC team lost to Northern Illinois and then did everything in its power to lose to Holy Cross, and Holy Cross wouldn't let them. Holy Cross, they're an FCS school in Worcester, Massachusetts. Like, whoa. And now BC goes out and almost beats Florida State. Like, and then on the flip side, you have Clemson, who looked awful, like incompetent in that game against Duke. And they've come back and they haven't played anyone. It was Charleston Southern and then whoever they played this past week. But they're scoring a million points, as they're supposed to in those games. And now they've got a noon kick at home against this highly ranked Florida State team that just laid an egg on the road. How are you thinking about this one? Because I'm starting to feel like the rumors of Clemson's demise were greatly exaggerated, and like we anointed Florida State a little bit too quick.
Yeah, I don't know. I think what these teams are doing, the Colorados, the FSUs, these kids are learning how to win, right? At the end of the day, they're scrappy about it, and they're losing focus here and there, which comes with, you know, not being in this position for, you know, a long time, you know, under this kind of scrutiny. So they're going to lose focus every now and again, but they're young, young teams, and they're figuring out how to win. So to me, they're not all going to be perfect, but give them credit for what it's doing. Like they're coming back. Where it's unforgivable is if they lose these games, right? But they're not. Like it's not pretty. It's not, you know, a lot like my golf game. As long as you don't kind of remember, as long as you don't go through it shot by shot, you just look at the final score. Sometimes it's not so bad, you know, where it's just like, oh, okay, I shot an 84 today. But if you look at how many trees I hit and how many people I almost killed on the course, it's just how many 4-foot putts I missed. It's a lot uglier to think of it that way. But I just think these guys are trying to figure it out on the fly. So I still think if I was going to place a bet this week, I'm still going to take FSU.
The road.
Yeah, I think Clemson looked so bad until they change something and it beat like a good solidified opponent. I'm not buying these last 2 weeks because it's they played two high school teams, right? So
basically,
you know, I still think FSU right now is a better team and are playing better football, to be honest with you. As long as the quarterback stays healthy. If he gets hurt, they're screwed. But
yeah, that's her off.
Yeah, he's right now lights out the best player on that field next week.
FSU gave up 457 yards of offense to Boston. Yeah.
It'll be a shootout. I have no doubt about it. It'll be an absolute shootout. But, you know, again, Clemson's at the point now where you got to prove it to me. Like, I don't
– Yeah.
That loss to Duke was a crummy one. And Duke's gone on to still have some great games. And
top 20 team.
You know, so it's – They're not the pushover either, but you're freaking Clemson. You know, you should never be losing to Duke. That's a game that they needed to figure out how to win, and they couldn't. So if they beat FSU, I'll start thinking about them a little bit differently. But right now, FSU is a great story to tell. I want to see them pull this off.
All right. So I think that about wraps up the college football talk. We got to talk Giants. We don't necessarily need to do a whole NFL thing. We've been going for a little while now, but we got to talk Giants. They were outscored, 61-0 in their first six quarters of the year or something? And they're not 0-2. I mean, what a roller coaster to have ridden watching those two games. What was your reaction to the way the game with the Cardinals went?
It's they're a frustrating team, right? They're so much better talent-wise than what they're showing. And it's really does suck because, you know, I don't think they're a bunch of phonies. I think the first week was an abomination, but at the end of the day, it was really down to that offensive line. What's frustrating now is that defense giving up that many points to Dobbs and that whole Arizona offense. They really came together 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Against a star-studded, you know, Giants defense with
really bad
one of the highest paid defensive tackles in the league, a bunch of pass rushers that are supposed to be, you know, highly coveted. Isaiah Simmons, who you got over from Arizona, like, and then a bunch of D-backs that are actually playing really well. They should have crushed those guys. So I'm psyched they won. It was a phenomenal comeback. Daniel Jones is, if they can figure out how to keep that you know, gear going for him, man, he's an absolute stud. The hard part is, if you watch the game again, I know he struggled in the first half. His receivers now are so fast, he needs a stronger arm. Like, there was twice where Slayton won, had his guy beat by a good five steps, and Jones, it was a little bit on the run, but underthrew that one, which ended up getting broken up. And then the Jalin Hyatt, big throw for 58 yards, same thing. He had to slow down and catch that.
Yeah.
If Jones can get another 5 yards out of that thing, he hits that, he hits him in stride and he's gone. They have so much speed between Waller and their receiving core right now. And then when Saquon gets healthy, you know, it's a lot of weapons. So I don't know. It's tough. I just don't know how you fix the offensive line to get better. I mean, now you got Andrew Thomas and Saquon both out this weekend against San Fran. Who the hell is going to guard Bosa? So
yeah.
It's not going to be pretty Thursday night by any means. So I think they'll be 1-2 very quickly. But hopefully they come back healthy after that and get ready for Seattle, who I think is very beatable. So it's a frustrating season so far just because, man, you look so forward to this offseason, more than we've had in a long time. I know we're not in the Jets situation, but us Giant fans really thought they were going to be, you know, big, big contenders this year for the NFC East, and I don't know if they really are at this point.
Not a coincidence that the game where they start throwing the ball to Jalin Hyatt, they win. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I agree. We got them. We have them as well.
that's the narrative I'm going with. Is just as goes Jalin Hyatt, so go the Giants, and I'll ignore everything else if it refutes that.
Who's your top five so far? This, you know, without going into week in, week out.
Ooh.
Or what's your top three NFC, top three AFC?
I mean, I think the biggest faller has to be the Bengals. Like, yeah. I did not have that team looking this bad. And that's really thrown a wrench into how I perceive the league, I feel like, because I'm not prepared really to be like, oh, yeah, these other AFC teams are definitely – really good. Like when you think about the Jets losing Rodgers, the Bills dropping that Monday night game, and the Bengals starting off 0-2, like that was probably going to be my AFC top three going into the year. And I don't know that the dust is really even settled enough. I think San Francisco has shown me I was absolutely wrong about them. Like Brock Purdy can apparently win in this league, which doesn't make any sense to me. I think you can't write off the Eagles, even if they haven't looked elite, until they really give you a reason to. But again, even outside of those teams, like I find it hard. I've been impressed by what the Dolphins have done on the AFC side. I've been impressed by the Ravens. I didn't think they would go on the road to Cincinnati and win. I don't think you can write the Bills off yet, but it feels way more wide open than I thought it was going to feel going into the year. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't like, I'm not sold on the Ravens yet. I think they're squeaking by some teams. But if you look at the AFC East, Dolphins by far look awesome, right? Yep. It's hard to deny that right now. There's so much speed and they're playing all around great ball,
but their defense looks terrible.
Defense looks terrible. But for right now, like they're still cream of the crop in the AFC East. Jets, Bills, and Patriots, unfortunately, all look pretty pedestrian. I think the Bills have the best chance.
I thought the Bills came back nicely.
They did, but I think they've got a little bit of work to do to be that elite team going forward. But they have more holes than before. Ravens, Steelers, Browns, Bengals. Bengals are atrocious. Browns, I have no idea what just happened to them.
So
Steelers finally looked a little bit better, but have a lot of holes. Ravens just not sold on. I think the Jaguars are by far the team in the South, but they
terrible.
Yeah, they look beatable as well. And then the Raiders being 1-1, you know, with the Chargers and the Broncos absolutely falling apart. It's really just the two teams that you don't want to play right now in the AFC are really just the Chiefs and the Dolphins. Everyone else is up for grabs on what you're going to get any given week. NFC is a lot more in a dominant situation. You got, I think, Cowboys and Eagles are playing out of their minds right now.
Cowboys have looked so much better than I ever imagined they would.
And that's painful for me to say. Commanders, I think, are playing better than what everyone anticipated, but I don't think they're quite there yet as world beaters. Packers, Lions, Vikings, Bears. I still think overall Lions are going to walk away with that division. You know, Falcons, Saints, Buccaneers, Panthers. You know, a lot of 2-0 teams right there, which
teams
is
aren't crazy, good.
But I don't know if any of them are great. It's to me, it's the 49ers, 49ers, the Rams, and Cowboys, Eagles right now are the four that would be fighting it out if I was putting a playoff pool together, but. I don't. It's just so much uncertainty. A lot of teams are starting out super slow. Like you said, the Bengals look like they've never played football before. Chargers look atrocious, which is crazy with all the talent that they have. It's really hard to figure out, to be honest with you, because there's no real rhyme or reason to it. It's just, I don't know. So I think all of it's still up for grabs. Unfortunately for the Giants, I think NFC looks the toughest out of the NFC, as far as it's going to be hard for them to climb their way back up, especially after a loss this weekend to the 49ers. So
they got a tall task ahead of them. Craig, this is in some respects a golf podcast. I want to run this hypothetical by you. So my friends and I were discussing this. Would you rather, I think it originally may have been phrased as, would you rather play Augusta alone or your home course with Tiger Woods, but your home course hosts major championships, so it doesn't count. So for you, it's, would you rather play Augusta alone or your local muni with Tiger?
Local muni with Tiger, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, like, to me, Augusta would be fun to play, but the experience of playing with the Tiger anywhere, like Tiger Woods, just the stories you could tell, especially like if it's, you know, just the two of you and a caddy, or two of you in a cart, whatever it is, man, that would be out of this world.
Do you feel like exciting. He's telling you those stories though? Like, that's what I'm hung up on.
I think if you had 18 holes with him and it's just the two of you playing, or you and your buddies playing, I think he's not going to tell you all of it. He's not going to tell you what happened with him and Ilya. He's not going to tell you, you know, like the stories of him and, you know, and some of the probably shadier stuff he may or may not have done. But I bet you he opens up about a lot of stuff. I bet he's got a ton of funny golf stories. You know, and I think he's probably a great guy's guy once you get him out there and playing.
And you'd prefer that to playing the Augusta National Golf Club?
Yeah, 100%.
Wow. I like couldn't disagree more. I don't think Tiger would say anything, first of all. I don't think he's that interesting a dude, frankly. Like, I get that he's friends with JT and JT is a fun guy or whatever. But at the end of the day, like, Tiger Woods is a guy who has just only done golf for 45 years. Like, it's all he spent his time on. I doubt he'd say anything that interesting. My local muni sucks. So he'd probably just be telling me how awful it is for the majority of that time. And I'm never going to get to play Augusta otherwise. So like a round with Tiger Woods where I don't like get any cool stories or anything out of it, which I don't think I would, versus playing the most famous golf course on the planet and getting to watch the Masters every year and go, oh, I remember when I played that hole, I went over there, then I went over there. Like 1,000 times out of 1,000, I'm taking Augusta. Like, it's not even a hard question for me. I think it's crazy that people are picking play with Tiger.
I think Tiger and I are best friends after the round. We've exchanged phone numbers. We're probably texting on the way, you know, drive home, probably grabbing dinner that night, whatever. I think you give me 18 holes with Tiger, I think we're best friends when it's all said and done. So Augusta can come and go. I've made a new best friend. I'm probably not doing this podcast anymore because I'm probably doing a podcast with him. Whatever. I mean, there's a lot to unfold here, but it's, you know, it would happen. I feel like we're simpatico.
That's like definitely an interesting window into your self-perception and how you feel like you build relationships with people, if nothing else.
I'm a fun guy. I don't like to tell you. I'm a really fun guy.
Yeah, totally. Hey, have I ever said you're not a fun guy? I don't think I've ever said that.
A lot. Even over Texas weekend. I think it was pretty mean.
Yeah, well, look, I'm a different person over text. I have I actually it's not even me. There's someone else sending those texts. I don't know who it is. We're trying to catch the guy who did this.
Got hacked again.
Exactly. It keeps happening, man. As we get things wrapped up here, Morris County Golf Club, which the name of that golf course, much like this podcast, is simply one Glen short today. As it should obviously be Glen Morris County Golf Club.
OGS.
Exactly. OGS. We're going there on October 3rd. By we, I mean you. I have a day job. Tell us, what should we be looking forward to? Where should we be looking out? This is the grand finale to the fall 2023 season. So this is big deal stuff.
Yeah. Look, the golf course is one of the best that we could have grabbed, especially, you know, if you look at golf in the Northeast this time of year, it's going to be absolutely awesome. It's really easy to get to from the tri-state area, which is something we strategically plan. It's, you know, anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour from most of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut spots. So it's really easy to get to. The food's going to be out of this world. The golf is going to be, you know, killer. We've got some awesome tee gifts already lined up. We've got some other great prizes throughout the day, you know, for the closest to the pins and putting contests and everything else from some of our sponsors. It is going to be an absolute blast. So I can't think of a better way to end the season than, you know, Morris County, because it's a golf course that I think everybody will appreciate, they'll love, and it's going to be an absolute party. So come on, come all, like, sign up. We don't have a ton of spots left, but we do have spots left. So make sure you sign up soon. You know, we'd love to see you. Make sure you stop by and say hi.
Yeah. So oneclubshort.com to get signed up, at oneclubshort on Instagram to see some snaps of the course. The food is up there. That always, I feel like I get hungry looking at our Instagram, because it's always like, oh, we're at, you know, this course where we're going to have an event, and check out this snack. And yeah, so definitely do check that out. Craig, as we wrap up here, you know, certainly we'll be back next week. Glenn will be with us. We'll be able to preview the Ryder Cup, which starts in 8 days from the day that we are recording this. Any parting shots as we get this episode wrapped up?
No, man, I'm just psyched JT had a good weekend, because I think that gets his mind right just before the Ryder Cup. We'll dive into that a little bit more next week, but you want this team going in with a lot of momentum, and that was the one biggest hurdle that I think this team had. How would he play in this kind of pressure? And I think I give him a ton of credit too for not just being, I'm gonna go out my own in practice, I'm gonna go out my own competing, and he's showing up and he's doing everything he can to get that game straight. So I'm psyched. Ryder Cup is one of my favorite events in all of golf. It'll be an absolute blast. I just hope the Americans can hold on for the win.
Me too. All right. So as we get this one wrapped up, as we said, you can keep up with everything about dates, courses, membership, registration at oneclubshort.com. We are at oneclubshort on Instagram and at oneclubshort and then the number one on Twitter. Podcasts are available wherever you get your podcasts, with the bonus of video on Spotify. And the whole video goes up on YouTube as well, where we're at oneclubshortpod. Craig, enjoyed it as always. Go Irish. And we'll do this again, same time, same place, next week. Till then, thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, everybody.